Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm your host, Georgiana Levine, and today's conversation is very much in theme with last weekend's new moon and Libra season, which is all about balance, truth, beauty, and justice. If you need a catch up on what's going on with Libra season, I did a podcast episode last week, and there is a podcast episode all about the new moon that we experienced last weekend. Today's guest encapsulates all of Libra's traits. She's actually a Libra rising, so there's no surprises there. And the work that she's doing in the world is changing the modeling industry for the better. Chelsea Bonner was born into the Australian entertainment industry with a famous Aussie actor for a father and an Aussie supermodel for a mother. And it was no surprise that she paved a way for herself through the glitz and glamour of the entertainment industry. What was surprising is the way in which she did it. I actually loved having this conversation with Chelsea. If you're not familiar with Chelsea Bonner, she's the founder of Bella Models, an agency focused on health and changing the perception of size and beauty. She's worked passionately within the media and modeling industry for many years to redefine the boundaries of fashion model sizes. I actually had quite a lengthy career in publishing. I thought I knew a lot about the industry. There is so much I didn't know. There is a lot from this interview that honestly disgusted me. There was a lot of eye-opening. And the work that Chelsea's doing really is so important. You'll hear about it throughout the interview, but she's really paving the way for this movement with body positivity and ensuring that the women and the men that she's representing are on board with this message. They very much need to be the message, which is so important, I think. I would love to hear your thoughts on this interview. It is a long one, but it's totally worth the listen. So if you do enjoy it, please make sure you take a screenshot on your phone and share it to your Instagram stories. Tag me at Georgiana Levine and Chelsea at Chelsea Bonner. If there's something in particular you loved about it, let us know in the story. I would love to hear it. Otherwise, you could leave a rating or review on the Apple Podcast app. I hope you enjoy this conversation with Chelsea Bonner as much as I enjoyed having it. A modeling agency focused on healthy body size and dedicated to changing our dangerously narrow perception of beauty.
Yes.
There is so much to unpick there just in that sentence. First of all, a modeling agency focused on healthy body size? What?
I know.
What does that even mean?
I know. Well, look, when I first started, everybody I knew thought I was going to go out of business.
Oh, really?
Yeah, really fast. Well, you know, I mean, now they throw words around like disruptor and thought leader and all that sort of stuff. But you've got to remember, I started Bella 18 years ago. Mm. So back then, I was just a pain in the ass. You know,
yeah.
There was no you know, wow, she's thinking outside the box. You know, it wasn't like that. It was like, get back in the box, please. And you know, this is the way it's done. This is the way it's always been done. And, you know, don't give up our secrets. Don't lift the curtain.
Ooh.
You know, I was very ostracized from my own work community because I had been an agent since I was 16. I started as a junior agent.
Yeah.
And I opened Bella when I was 28. And all of those years I spent working as an agent. and across models and hair and makeup artists, stylists, photographers. I did a lot of different types of agency work. But so, you know, my work friends, a lot of them had become friends, and we went to all the parties and did all the, you know, everything that you do. And when I opened Bella, it all stopped. Just like...
Really?
It stopped, yes. And that's how afraid people were of it. They were terrified of inclusion and terrified of change and terrified of, you know, just well, but what do you mean? Like they just couldn't get their heads around it. You know, what do you mean? I was listening to a interview yesterday, actually, on the ABC, and it kind of reminded me a little bit, you know, different but similar. It's funny, like people choose to believe what they want to believe. They believe the science when it suits them. So they believe their doctor, you know, they believe the you know, if they've got cancer, they believe our scientists when they go in for treatment and all that sort of stuff. But when it comes to the environment, people choose just not to believe the science. And it was kind of like that. It was like, well, everybody should belong and everybody should be represented. And my industry was just like, I don't believe that.
Yeah.
I don't believe that's true.
I want to unpack this more because it fascinates me on so many different levels. But before we unpack it, what was the impetus for you for starting Bella? Just so people have a bit of a background how it all kind of came about.
Yeah, so I grew up in the industry. My mum was a top model, and my dad is a very well-known Australian actor. Yeah. So I was just born into it. And I guess, you know, there's a lot that, you know, goes into living in that lifestyle, and I wrote all about it in the book, so I won't go into that. But it was more when I hit my teenage years, when my body change. Everyone expected that I would look like, you know, a version of my mum or my dad or something in between. So, you know, the expectation was that I was going to be this, you know, another supermodel or, you know, something similar. And I had never really thought about it. I was a skinny, sporty kid. I'd never thought twice about what I might look like when I grow up or anything like that. And you know, I hit around that 14, 15 mark, and, you know, these boobs just came out of nowhere.
Feels. You know,
booty and, you know, and my mum wasn't shaped like that. She didn't have, you know, a huge bust, and she didn't have a big booty or big hips or anything like that.
Yeah.
And we grew up in Melbourne with her side of the family. So most of her side of the family had her genetics, you know, so... I was sort of surrounded by these tall, slim, elegant-looking people, and I just went in a different way. My sisters often say, you know, they call me Cabbage Patch Kid because I just look like a Cabbage Patch Kid. But, you know, it's kind of true, and, you know, little nose, just completely different features. So, and it was the first time I'd thought about, well... my body as a, you know, we didn't have a great family life. We had, you know, moments of great fun and stuff like that. But my dad was an alcoholic. So, you know, it was a pretty tumultuous childhood, really. And I wanted to get out of home, and I was desperate to get out as soon as I possibly could. Obviously, I'd heard the stories about my dad starting in the theatre when he was 14, and my mum had left school and started modelling when she was 16, and I was about 14, and I thought, well, dad was 14 and mum was 16, I'll give it a go. And so I went in to see an agency, a modelling agency in Melbourne, and they said I was to come back when my shape settled down.
Oh, God.
Right. And I did not know.
It's not funny. I'm sorry. But it's not laughable.
No, it's stupid. Yeah, no, I laughed at that too. Now, at the time, it wasn't funny.
No.
At the time, I wasn't even angry at the time. I was too young to really process all of that. If someone said that to me now, I would say a very different thing. But back then, you know, I was like, my shape, what does that mean? And I had worn one of my mum's outfits into the interview, and I, you know, so I was thinking, well, my mum's one of the top models in Australia, I'm wearing her clothes, so the thought that I might be the wrong shape for modelling had not even occurred to me. So I was just a really curvy size, you know, 8 to 10.
Oh, so small, but just with some shape to you.
Just with shape, yeah. So I was like the original but blonde Kardashian.
Yeah.
And so it, you know, and then I was like my shape, and then I realised I meant my weight, and then I thought, well, I mean, I don't really know. I'd never thought about it before. You know, it was so confusing. I'd never thought about dieting. I'd never thought about anything. You know, I could walk around in my mum's clothes. It had never occurred to me. And I think at 14, because I was so curvy, they could see that I was going to continue to be curvier. And, you know, but you don't think like that when you're young. And so I tried every diet you could possibly think of, my dreams for this, you know, life and this escape route and all of that just completely shattered. And I thought, well, what do I do? I'm too shy to be an actor. I was never great on stage. I think the pressure when your dad's an actor, when you've got a parent who's famous for something, everyone expects that you're going to be really good at it. It doesn't matter whether you're a plumber or a hairdresser or, you know, just a great mum or whatever. They just put that you've got that pressure. Well, your mum was a great, so you're going to be awesome. It's like, well, maybe I won't be. Maybe I will have postnatal depression. And, you know, you can't, like, we just put so much pressure on people, don't we?
Absolutely. So, and you had two famous parents.
And I had two
famous double trouble.
and you know, so I thought, well, I always was obsessed with the agents, you know, my mum's agents and my dad's agents and how they worked and what they did, and everything around in the house revolved around getting the phone call at, you know, somewhere between 4 and 5:30 every day. And who was the person with that power that our whole lives revolved around, this phone call.
Okay.
And so that had always intrigued me, you know, well, if I could be anything really, and being a model's okay and being an actor's okay, but really I want to be the person who's making the phone call, because to me they were God, you know, they were the people who rang in with, that was our food, that was our mortgage, that was our trip to Lake Eildon, that was our, you know, so that's pretty much all I knew about agents, was that they were the bosses, you know, they were the ones that told you what to do. You know, since learned after 25 odd years of being an agent that's not true.
But... Oh, well, that's how you
learn. It sounded really good at the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I was interested in anything creative, so makeup and all of this. So I did, you know, makeup courses, beauty therapy courses. I worked, my mum opened a department in modelling school when I was 16, and she opened an agency arm of it, and I worked for her there. And then I left, I was living out of home anyway then, but then I moved back down to Melbourne and I got a job with my mum's ex-agent, who was like a god to me. And I just didn't let up. I just was so annoying. I can't even believe he took me on. But
did you start as like an intern or something?
Free.
Yeah.
Okay. There wasn't, like, back then there wasn't such things as interns. You know, this is a whole new world, this intern thing. Back then there wasn't interns. So I would just turn up for free and, you know, what can I do? How can I help? I'll fold those. I'll take the rubbish out. You know, does anyone want a coffee? And I just basically badgered that poor man until he had to give me a job and pay me.
Oh, so good. I love it.
And so that's how it started.
And like, at what point were you like, I'm going to do this differently. I don't want to have a regular modeling agency. We need change in the industry.
Well, it started, you know, I'd resigned is the wrong word. I had come to terms with the fact that I was a big girl. I didn't like it. I didn't like that I was, you know, I felt like I was just not representing my family and not living up to people's expectations just by walking into a room, you know, because I was so different looking. And to the rest of them. And my younger sister was a model, and she was discovered early, and she was modeling, and she looked just like my mum. And yeah. so, you know, people would say to her, "Oh, bring your sister Chelsea to this event and this event." And I'm, you know, you couldn't get two more different looking people. And you could see the shock on their faces and things like that. So, you know, I'd sort of put this like false bravado on, I guess, you know, it's all fine and it's okay. And, you know, I'm good at what I do and I'm a nice person and I'm loyal and I'm, you know, I talk myself up in my head. It doesn't matter. Mm. You know, I have no control over my outer shell. You know, I've tried every diet that there is. I've tried everything. There's nothing, there's just nothing I can do about it.
Yeah, and this is who I am.
This is who I am.
Yeah.
And, you know, but there was still, you know, quite an element of shame involved, just having, you know, it's like someone putting on, you know, putting you in a character suit or making you up to look like a completely different person to how you feel inside. Mm. And that's how you have to walk around every day. That's how I felt. So I hadn't assimilated the two, my body and my mind. I was keeping them separate. I was just ignoring the body part. I was like, okay, well, I can't, that's something I can't even think about. So it's not like I went, oh, it's fine, I'll just accept it, or it's me. Yeah. That wasn't how it was. It was, okay, my body's over there, can't do anything about that. All I can do is use my mind, and that's my strength and my skill, you know. So so that's sort of what I focused on. And then after working in the industry for, you know, quite a few years, I got to know the models really well, and a lot of them became very close friends. And once I realised what they were doing to themselves in order to maintain this standard sample size and the amount of drugs, the lack of eating, the amount of laxatives, the just absolute desperation to constantly monitor what they were eating and what they were, you know, fueling themselves with. And you know, we'd all go out for a nice dinner and the models would all get up and go to the bathroom after dinner like it was just normal to throw up, you know.
Yeah.
And it wasn't discussed. It was never discussed. We didn't have models ever come into the agency and say, "I'm really struggling to maintain this weight." Sorry, that's my Billy Bear.
No, that's okay. It's very cute.
Yeah, she's just barking at the builders. The more I saw, the more I understood what it really meant to try to be a really successful fashion model. I thought, oh God, no, that, you know, I'm not interested in that at all. That
yeah.
type of life, it's a horrible way to exist.
Yeah.
You know, and it's terrifying. They, constant terror. You know, if you put on 1 centimetre on your hip, that you will lose a job that you've been put on option for, and someone else will get it, and that will be the job that launches their career.
Yeah.
And you missed it because, you know, you gave in the night before and ate a bowl of pasta.
Yeah.
You know, it was that cutthroat, and still is in many places.
Yeah.
Not at Bella.
Yeah.
But, you know, many agencies are the same. You know, you have to get your measurements down. You have to get your measurements down. You have to get your measurements down. It just wasn't discussed in our industry. It just wasn't. Models were afraid to say they were struggling because they didn't want the agents or the clients to think that they wouldn't be able to work or wouldn't be available for work or would have, you know, guilty feelings or shameful feelings about booking them for work because they didn't want to participate in an eating disorder culture. So the models themselves would keep it very quiet, and, you know, but it would get to a stage where they couldn't maintain those kinds of eating plans, if for want of a better word, it's not even, you know, just lack of eating, for any length of time. Some could carry on like that for a few years before it would take them out. Others would only be able to carry on for a couple of months before it would take them out. You know, a lot of drugs were and are used to stop hunger pangs and also to keep energy up. So because when you're not eating, you have absolutely no energy. So the only way to have energy.
I can't even miss lunch, Chelsea.
Oh, I know.
Without losing energy.
Yeah, exactly. So you have to get pulse energy from somewhere, don't you? So, and that's why they rely on certain drugs that give them energy, speed, and cocaine, and guarana, coke, coffee, you know, anything, Ruggles. Anything that's going to, you know, give them some alertness.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, then my sister, my younger sister, who came back from America, came back with an eating disorder. And there was just no arguing with her. You know, she was about 47 kilos. She had hair all over her body. She was seconds away from being put on a colostomy bag. And I don't know if anyone's ever watched someone starve to death.
No.
It is the most horrific, horrific thing to watch. Mm. And I mean, it's awful in countries where there's no food, but it's particularly harrowing to watch somebody starve themselves to death when food is so readily available.
Yeah.
And it just, you know, that just broke my heart. So it was all of those things. It was all of those things combined.
Yeah.
And then I was modelling in America myself. I was a curve model. And I just thought, I just can't do this anymore. There has to be a better way.
Yes. So this is what I don't understand, especially with women's magazines and the industry. We know that women want to feel represented.
Yes.
We know that women want to see themselves on the pages of those magazines.
Yes.
So why is the industry, and it's getting better, and we'll talk about it.
It is,
but
why, it is getting better.
Why was the industry so resistant against it?
You know, it's change at all people are resistant against. You know, you know, something like 85% of people just really, really hate change, just really dislike it. 10% can get on board with it, and 5% are the change makers.
Mm.
You know, they're the ones who create the change. So most of society will, you know, will be suspicious about it, that it's been done that way forever. So why would we change it? And what happens if we change it? It's like Americans with Medicare. You know, well, as Australians, we sit here and we've always had Medicare and we're so lucky, and we think, how can they be so afraid of something that is so beneficial for their whole country?
Mm.
But they've been so brainwashed that it's terrifying, and they think the whole medical system's going to collapse, that they believe that. And that's exactly what happens with women and men who absorb media and advertising as truth, which is 85% of people.
Mm.
So we are brainwashed, and we're not talking about just our generation. We're talking about, this is a generational passing down of this brainwashing.
Yeah.
So from the beginning of mass marketing and advertising agencies in our grandparents' time through to our own mothers and now ourselves and our children, this is, you know, we are constantly being told we're not good enough, we don't belong, you're not allowed to play with me unless you're part of the cool gang and that's my product, you know, and this is my look and my aesthetic and my this and my that. And look, the people who are, I'm not blaming anyone here, because the people who started this are long dead now, who started all this fear mongering and whatever. So there's no one to just grab and blame.
Yeah.
There would have been back in the beginning. But the thing is that, you know, we have to stop it now. Like, it's gone way too far.
And we have the power to stop it too.
We have the power to stop it. And, you know, I mean, things like, I wish we could just have a global day where every single person who feels misrepresented by the media and advertising industries just sits down for an hour in their workplace, or, you know, something like that. We need a really big statement about who we want to see represented and how desperately we want to be included in the conversation, included in in you know, the whatever. There is no cool gang. The cool gang, I'm telling you, I've hung with the cool gang for years. I've spent most of my life.
They're
not that cool. They are just normal people.
Yeah.
And, you know, they get home from, my mum would come home from shooting the magazine cover for Cosmo magazine. She'd take off all her makeup, get rid of all her stuff that she had to wear for the day, you know, put her old granny knickers and a t-shirt on with some sneakers and cook us eggs.
Yeah, nice.
That's, you know, that's
yeah,
that is real. That's what's really happening. And, so, you know,
in 2002 when you started Bella, who did you have to convince? Like, who were the hardest people to be like, let's start representing healthy bodies?
High street retailers and magazines,
yeah.
particularly magazines.
Okay,
and you know, high end magazines are still we still butt heads with
really?
A bit. Yeah. I mean, you wouldn't think, but yeah, there's. I mean, and I have much respect for, you know, people like Edwina who run Vogue. I've known them a long, long time through, you know, we've been in the industry about the same amount of time. I've seen her come up through the ranks as I have, and I have enormous respect for her. But also I just wonder who the bean counters are who are looking at who's actually buying their magazine, because I'm telling you right now, 15-year-olds and 16-year-olds and 18-year-olds are not going out and spending $10 on a magazine. It's just not happening. Uh-uh. It is, you know, women... predominantly over 30 who are buying those high-end magazines, and they're just never represented. And we know every single statistic that's ever been come up with through the Australian Bureau of Statistics and globally say that 60%, roughly 60% of us will be somewhere between a size 10 and size 14, with more people being closer to a size 14, and 80% of us will be a size, you know, 14 to 16 and over. So I just, you know, it really fascinates me. But then when you look through, especially print mag, but online as well, look at the amount of diet ads there are. And, you know, the diet industry is worth something like $500 billion annually. And they take out a lot of advertising. They pay for a lot of advertising.
Yeah.
And one of the things I saw when we first started doing magazine shoots and first started doing editorials, which I was so excited about, obviously it's fantastic. One of the things I hated was they always had to say, you know, it always had to be captioned on the plus side or, so, you know, something like that.
Really?
It always had, yeah. Couldn't just be like white linen is beautiful or whatever they had for everybody else.
Yeah.
You know, it was always, you know, plus advantage or plus this or plus, or, you know, curves ahead or, I'm like, you don't even have to say anything.
Yeah,
you know?
It's almost like a token thing, right?
Just call it whatever it is.
Absolutely.
Sunshine, happy days, whatever the editorial is called, just like everybody else's editorial, and let people make up their own mind about whether they think that model is curvy or not, or plus size or not.
Absolutely.
That's not, you know what I mean? It's just let people see women of different shapes and sizes and colours without tagging them.
Oh, God, imagine if you started tagging every ethnicity that was featured in the magazine.
I know, I mean, there would be absolute outrage, but for some reason size is not considered in the same way, the segregation and the abuse and the you know, the thing that, you know, people feel free in public to come up to you and say things like, you know, you'd be really beautiful if you lost a few kilos, or...
Oh,
you know, I don't think you should eat that muffin. You know, total strangers.
Yeah.
And this has happened to me personally. So, you know, it is not the same. I'm not saying it's exactly the same, but certainly anybody, any curved woman who's, you know, sort of over a size 12, 14, 16 will have had complete strangers make comments on their weight.
Mm.
And, you know, what they should do about it. It's crazy.
It's so crazy.
Yeah, so these editorials would come out and I'd be all excited and I'd be so grateful and thankful and, you know, that, and I am. But on the very next page would be an ad for a diet product.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And all the next three pages would be, a, you know, a gym thing, a weight loss tablet, and a diet plan. And, you know, and so it was kind of for a long time, it's, you know, one step forward, two steps back, two steps forward, one step back, you know, and that's sort of how the whole, the business has been right from the beginning. You know, we get a little bit ahead, then we get knocked on our ass again, then we have to get back up and we have to go ahead again. And then we, you know, we need to find really good partners in this change. And I did with Mia Friedman, as a lot of people probably know. She's been an enormous supporter of mine from the beginning. As the editor of Cosmo, she made a pledge to include all size women in every issue of Cosmo magazine, and she absolutely did that. And I can't even tell you how much that meant to my business, but also just women in Australia in general. And, you know, and other people. Then Julie Russell from Australian Women's Weekly rang, and she said, we're going to make sure that at least three of the 12 editorials every year will feature curve or plus size models, which, you know, was a big thing back then. It might not sound like much, but back then it was huge. Yeah. So,
You know, it was so, and again, not funny, haha funny, but just funny, strange, funny, looking through your book and seeing some of the campaigns that you used to do. And, and the dagginess, for lack of a better word.
God, it's awful, isn't it?
Yes, of some of the, like, catalogue shoots that you do for plus size.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
And that's all that was available, right?
That's all. Well, it wasn't all that was available. It was the way it was styled, you know, and it was, you know, and the point of it all seemed to be to not show any part of a plus size or curve woman's body at all.
You
know, just cover her from, you know, neck to toe. And make everything as blousy and whatever as possible. You weren't allowed to show any shape, or they didn't pin anything to show you curves, or everything was supposed to sit out. You know, don't touch it. It's got to all hang off your body, like you don't have a body. You know, it was, and it was just so crazy, because I think I wrote in the book too, you would have read that, you know, I'd go in and the hair and makeup artists would...
Oh, make you, you know, look like, old.
I'd go in looking like a 22-year-old, you know, and I would have patched together some outfit from, you know, God, hunting through all sorts of places to try and wear something that I liked, you know, because you couldn't just go to one shop. It was really hard to, you know, dress yourself with any self-expression. And then I'd get made up, you know, the brief would be to make me up to look as old as possible. That was their brief, not their own choice. And then they'd put me in the outfit there, and makeup artists and stylists would look at me and go, you've looked a million times better
before we even touched.
Just in your own clothes, you looked so much better when you just walked in, and we've just spent an hour making you look awful, basically. So they didn't feel good about it either.
No.
You know, and nobody wanted to work on plus size campaigns, because that was the problem. It wasn't nice. It wasn't beautiful. It wasn't, well, let's get our best photographer and our best hair and makeup artist and give them free range to create these amazing, you know, images. And it wasn't like that. They'd hire all the best people and then tell them to make us look as old and as awful as they possibly could. So you couldn't even get the great hair and makeup artists or photographers after a while, or they wouldn't even put their name on it.
Yeah, interesting.
You know, because their brief was to do everything that was against. And that was my main point. My main point when I opened Bella was, all you have to do, everyone's so terrified of shooting curvy models, all you have to do is shoot them and dress them like everybody else. That's it. It's as simple as that.
Absolutely. And, well, I mean, the industry is changing now. I mean, as someone who's completely outside of the industry, just as a consumer of magazines, you know, I've noticed it changing. I've noticed it changing within fashion retailers.
Yes. It's great, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is great. So what kind of changes have you seen, and how's that impacted your girls at Bella?
Well, you know, it's we've seen some massive, massive changes. We've still got, obviously, a long way to go. Just our industry, the curve side of the whole industry is still only books about 3% of the 100% of work. So 97% is still going to... I know. So we have come a long way, but there's a long way to go. But, you know, the great thing for me over the last 5 years has been working with our high street retailers like, you know, Sports Girl and Jeans West and Suzanne Grey and, you know, Trenery and all of those guys. And they have been so much more inclusive, not just of size, but, you know, as over the years, Bella became a much broader church. So now we represent... We started representing everybody that no other agency would represent. So size diversity, gender diversity, age diversity, ethnic diversity, ability diversity.
Wow.
So pretty much everything that nobody else wanted to do.
Yeah, you're like, come to Bella.
I was like, come to me. I will be your mama, you know, and protect you and, you know, help me make this change, because I need people who are willing to put themselves out there and be the game changers. I need people who are willing to be photographed and willing to put themselves out there in order to create the change. And so I've amassed, like, I call them my army of body image warriors, and they're male and female and, like I said, every colour and every racial background, every age, every everything. And they just are so vocal on their own social medias and their own, in their own interviews. They're really, 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 really championing, you know, with me. So it's so good, because I was alone for so long.
Yeah,
you've
got an army working with you.
Yes, exactly. So I'm really proud of that. It's one of the things I'm most proud of, is that I feel like I've helped to create this incredible community of like-minded people. You know, I feel like now, you know, I know it sounds ridiculous, but I used to think that if something happened to me, who would continue my work? Who would keep going? Who would be, you know, because you have to kind of have balls of steel for this, right? Or as Betty White would say, vagina of steel. you know, you do, because you have to have no ego. You have to be able to just keep going back and asking again and again and again and again. And you can't get angry and you can't get frustrated and you can't call people names and you can't throw chairs out of windows. You can't do any of those things.
And this is you as the agent, right?
As an agent, yeah.
Yeah. What about the models? And I think about this all the time. I had a brief stint at acting in my youth. It was rejection after rejection after rejection at every casting. And I just didn't have a tough enough skin for it.
Yes.
My skin's a lot tougher now. But what do you, like, is there some sort of education with the girls and the men, I guess, that you represent around that rejection? Or is it just something that they just have to go through as being part of the industry?
Well, it's two phase, right, or three phase. It's sort of when they come in to meet us, we gauge them, we talk to them about it, you know, we talk to them about the ins and outs of the industry, and, you know, that you may go to 20 castings and everyone will say you're too tall, you're too this, you're too that, you're too whatever, and then you'll land that client who absolutely loves you, and then because you've got that client, you get another client, and, you know, but that's the nature of the industry. You can always be too wrong in some way for someone, but then for other clients you're going to be perfect. So you can't, you know, you need to not take that on board. It's not personal. And we kind of can gauge their reactions in interviews and just how they are as people, and if we feel like they're struggling at any way with their self-esteem or their body image or anything like that, we're very careful about whether we sign them in the first place, because, you know, we certainly don't want to trigger anybody into a mental health issue and or damage their physical health. So it starts right from the beginning. And then obviously as they go along, they'll go to the first 18 months of modelling is rough, because you've got to get all your test shoots done. Everything costs a fortune. You're doing a whole heap of free test shoots for shots. So, you know, you are investing in your portfolio, basically. And as you're doing that, we're getting shots out to clients. What it takes about the 18-month mark, and I've read articles from all over the world, and every single agent in the whole world says 18 months. And
yeah,
it's like, yeah, that's what it is. Because it takes that long to sort of develop you, you know. And it's just like starting any job, really. You know, you have to learn the ropes. If you work in retail, you have to, you know, stock take five times before you know where every single thing on the floor is. It's the same thing with modelling. You need to know your angles. You need to, you know, it's a skill that you can't teach someone to be photogenic, but people can be naturally photogenic, but they still have to learn how to work a camera.
Mm.
You know, you have to be able to stand in front of a camera and just move without any direction. You're like, right, get up there, make that outfit look good, off you go. It's like a silent dance routine almost, you know. And so it takes a while. You have to do a lot of shoots for free and pay for shoots in order to learn how to move, what your best angles are, all of that. And so we try to prep people as much as we possibly can for that stage, you know, but then everything that you ever say to anybody is filtered through the lens of what they've seen and felt and experienced themselves in their lives. And some people listen to you intently and they get it, and other people just think, well, that'll never happen to me, I'm going to be famous next week. And you can't. If someone thinks like that, they're going to have a really hard time.
Absolutely.
You know,
does personality come into it as well when you're choosing someone for your books?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'd say it's 50-50 for us. Like I said, we're way more human than most agencies. So we don't, when people walk in, we don't go, oh, she's going to make us a lot of money, we don't care if she's awful or he's awful. You know,
yeah, she's a real diva, but
yeah,
she'll earn us some coin.
She's going to make, we don't, you know, my values are that I'm not wasting my time on an awful human being to make them fame or money. That is not what I've been put here to do. I am trying to highlight people who have something to contribute to the world, you know, in some sensible way, or at least will be grateful and humble that they are lucky enough to be in this industry that so many people want to be a part of, and just for whatever reason they just weren't born photogenic, and so they have to earn $25 an hour at a shop down the road while you as a model get to earn $500 an hour or $200 an hour, you know, doing something that is you know, it's quite a lovely job to have. You know, it can be tough and all of, it's a lot of hours on you. Anyone who's gone shopping, right, people say, oh, models, are anyone who has gone shopping for a good pair of jeans or a swimsuit,
oh, God.
And you get to that shopping centre and you go into every goddamn shop and you're there all day and you're in and out of your clothes and you just want to, by the end of the day, you want to kill yourself.
Yeah.
That's basically what a day in the life of a model is.
It sounds horrible.
That's
Chelsea.
All they do is just change clothes all day. So, well, it's horrible for those of us who don't like shopping, but, you know, obviously a lot of models are attracted to the industry because they love changing clothes. And
absolutely.
They, you know, but it's still tiring. It doesn't matter how much you love it. It's still tiring. And all the, you know, jet lag and the flights and the early mornings and it's not as easy as what everybody thinks, but still it's still an opportunity that so many people would want to have. And yeah, so I don't like to work with people who think that, you know, by they've been touched by some magical god who has made them deserving of all of the things in life. Everybody is deserving of the same amount of things, like, in my opinion. And if you are lucky enough to be born photogenic, then you should be just so grateful. If you can make a career out of it, then you are one of the lucky ones.
Absolutely.
You know?
As someone who is not photogenic at all.
I don't know. I've seen you on video.
I don't think so. I think that people that have it. It's very hard.
You can't teach it.
No. And to feel comfortable in front of the camera too. Like, I know you said it takes time, but I think some people just have that kind of natural ability.
Some people do, and some people just don't either. I've signed some absolutely beautiful, beautiful people over the years who just, you know, they just are so uncomfortable and self-conscious.
Yeah. And sometimes
in front
it
of
doesn't
the camera.
Translate, does it? Like beauty
it
in
doesn't.
Real life?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're pretty good at picking who, you know, I mean, that's one of the things about being an agent. It's a bit like being an art critic or or anything like that, you have an eye for it and you can pretty much pick who's photogenic and who's not at first glance. So then it's about how we bring that out and how we get them to engage with the camera. But some people are incredibly photogenic and you look at their photos and they're so engaged and but they hate it. They can't stand it. You know, they're just, it's an awkward thing for them and they don't want to do it. And we just say, bless you, off you go. It's not for you, you know, because if you're starting off feeling like that and then you add all the pressures of the industry on top of that, then it's never going to be a good outcome.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah. So what are the guidelines with, you call them curve models, don't you, rather than plus size?
Well, I don't like to use any terms, but, you know, for the purposes of interviews and things, it's very difficult to explain what I do without using it. So I just, I just say 10 plus. So models over a size 10 normally.
So that's the guideline for the difference, I guess?
Yes. So so mainstream boards and agencies work from a size, you know, well, they work up to maximum size 10. And I don't mean a curvy size 10. I mean a small 10.
Yeah.
And then we start at a size 10. Well, we don't anymore. We started I think our smallest girl's about a size 6, but she's also about 4 foot. So, you know, she's the right. Yeah, it's all relative. So, we are completely no boundaries. We have no boundaries at our agency at all. So, but when I first started, I started off where everybody else left off, which was at a full size 10, up to whatever size we thought was, you know, healthy for that particular human being. So, I've got models who are a size 20, but they're also 6 foot tall, you know.
There are some stupid, crazy people out there who say that, you know, curve size models promote an unhealthy body image.
Oh, God. Which I get is that all just, the time.
Yeah, I'm
and
sure
I've had
you
that
do.
Since I started. Yeah. You know, I promote obesity and I promote this and I promote, well, you know, I'm a size 14 to 16. I can tell you I am not obese. I'm probably fit, and my models are probably fitter than most of these critics.
Yes.
And, you know, I've invited several of the loudest ones. I've gone back, you know, in media and said, well, look, Dr. So-and-so, how about we go to a current affair or today, tonight, and we meet down at Fitness First and I'll bring along, you know, some of my size 16 plus models and we'll do a workout together and they can film it and do a wellness check at the end and check everyone's, you know, blood pressure and all of that.
Yeah.
And then you can prove your point. Prove me wrong.
And I bet none of them have taken you up on that.
No one. No one has ever taken me up on that. And that offer is still out there.
Yeah.
Anyone who wants to go work out with my team, they can go work out with them anytime, but they better watch out because, you know, those girls are fit. But it's not even about that. You know, it doesn't matter if you're a top athlete or not. You should be allowed to be who you are in the world. That's the whole point, isn't
absolutely.
It?
Absolutely. And I mean, from what you've said, who the critics should be concerned about are the size zero models that are walking the catwalk.
That's exactly right. They should be looking really hard at the mainstream industry, not at my side of the industry.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, where people get to eat a normal meal with their family at night and, you know, don't live in constant terror that leads to, you know, clinical depression and worse, suicides and all sorts of things that have happened in our industry.
Yeah.
You know, they need to be focused over there, but instead they're, you know, trying to focus on my little bit of the world. But, you know, just learn to have a Teflon coating. You know, I just spray it on in the morning before I walk out the door and I wash it off when I get home at night.
Sounds good. I'm going to try doing that too.
Yeah.
Can I ask you a perhaps really ignorant question? Talk to me about male models. There doesn't really seem to be like a representation of plus size, I'm using inverted commas, male models out there. Do we not need that? Is that not something...
No, we definitely need it. And we do have, you know, the industry term is XL or brawn models.
Mm.
And we do represent men who are size XL, XXL, XXXL. We've got them on our talent board. But it is a newer side of the industry, retailers are catching up, and more brands for, you know, men who are XL plus are coming out every day, and it's more and more included. David Jones has ranges now. We do work for Johnny Biggs. We do work for Profile Men's. We do lots of different lows and all, you know, all of that sort of stuff. I'd love to see the higher end, obviously the same with women, the great suiting companies and those guys get on board. But yeah, we can only put on our books as many male models as the industry is demanding. So it's kind of hard because we're trying to create the demand and educate clients at the same time as we are, you know, trying to provide them with models and opportunities. So it's kind of a, you know, we've got to attack on a few fronts to get these things across the line.
Yeah.
But it's getting better, and so it should, because it's, you know, men have exactly the same body image issues as women do. They just digest it differently.
Okay.
And they're just taught so early on not to be, not to whinge, not to, you know, man up. You're not allowed to, you know. So it's very hard to get men to talk. Very, very difficult to get men to talk about these issues. And, you know, I'm always on it trolling, trying to find people who are, you know, men who are willing to talk and studies and things to back up, you know, my claims. But it is right at the sort of beginning point, I guess. In America, it's a lot better because there's a lot more people there.
A bigger market too,
Much bigger market. And the UK, obviously, much bigger market. So, but the thing is, you know, Australian retail is really struggling. We've got shops closing all over the place. We've got big, big department stores having to, you know, let go of half their spaces and become much smaller and close 50 stores down and all of this sort of stuff. And, you know, my whole thing is, well, you're having to do that because Australian people are going offshore to purchase things in their size.
Yeah.
That they can easily find on the internet now. But if you provided those items in your store, you wouldn't have to be closing stores. Right. You know, I don't understand how I feel like I'm the only one looking at the statistics.
I know, it must be very frustrating. Oh, I can,
you know,
imagine.
It is sometimes. But, you know, I have to say, I've got some excellent clients who are right with me. They completely get it. And a lot of the times I find that the, you know, marketing and advertising people in the company understand completely what I'm saying. But when it gets up to a higher level, the CEOs and the people who have to sign off on it, they are still so old school and they don't get it.
Yeah.
Like, what do you mean? You know, what are you talking about? And so it's like this upper middle management and then the final sign off, that's where everything just goes wrong.
Absolutely.
You know, so I get a lot of people who want to partner with me and they get excited about what I'm talking about and they understand the numbers and they're like, oh my God, that's, you know, that's huge. 80% we're not even marketing to. That's massive. We need to do something about this. And then they go upstairs and say, hey, we just had this great conversation, blah, 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 blah. And the CEO goes, what?
No.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, well, they're just looking at numbers and figures, aren't they? Of money, finances.
Yeah, and it's like business. They just don't. Well, it's not even that they're not looking at the numbers and the figures. That's the point. They're like, well, but this is the way it's always been done, and we're, you know, and it's like, well, yeah, except that you are marketing to less than 1% of the population.
Mm. What do you think about social media? How has it changed the way you guys work now? Because it must have had quite a big impact from the perspective of models being able to represent themselves in a way? Is that a
thing? Yeah, it's, I mean, it's been, you know, look, it's like any technology. There's good and evil in everything, isn't there? It, you know, it can be used for such good purposes and then the sheer volume of images that we see every day. And when you think about the percentage, so, you know, 97% is still mainstream driven, old fear mongering media, and 3% is really positive. And so And it's, you know, it's the same across social media. So unless you are actively seeking people who are working in this space and adding them, the more you add, the more you'll find come up in your feed. And you need to get on there and just delete and unfollow anything that makes you feel like shit. You've just got to completely get off all of that stuff. Don't even look at it. And, you know, if you fill your social media feeds up with people who are doing amazing things, achieving amazing things, are really honest and raw and beautiful, messy humanity, and just, you know, so open, that you will just, you're going to feel like a completely different human being at the end of each day, just completely different. Just don't absorb any of that nonsense. It's just awful at brainwashing.
It is.
It takes years to pick that stuff out of your brain. I've done so much work on myself and, you know, for the business and for myself personally around this space and around, you know, all sorts of things and CBT and you know, God, I've done so many different things. But even I still find little pockets in my mind that I'll stumble across one day when I'm thinking about something or talking about something and I go, oh my God, that's not even what I think. Well, how did I miss that spot? Oh, and then you find a little cluster, you know, and you're like, oh my God, it's still in there. And you have to unravel it again and use all those skills. You know, is that my thought or is that somebody else's implanted into my brain? And that's what you have to ask yourself all the time. Do I really think that, or is that something that I was taught to believe?
Or that I've compared on social media that morning.
That I've just absorbed unknowingly, you know, it's unwittingly skipped through my awareness and now it's stuck in there and it's not actually even something I believe to be true.
What about the individual models raising their profiles on there? Because I have to say that I've got a few curve models that I follow on there because they make me feel really positive about myself.
Good.
And it's a really nice way for them to be showcased whether they're booking jobs or not, really.
I've no problem from that aspect of it. The only thing that I worry about when they make their profiles public is that there's no, you know, as agents, we can filter out a lot of negativity and we just don't need to tell the models if people are being horrible or with Instagram and those sorts of things, I can't stop them from hearing those things and I can't stop them from reading those things. And that kind of just upsets me, but that's just that's my protective.
It's your mama bear in
me. Yeah, it is. It's the mama bear in me, you know, and I don't want anyone to ever hear anything awful like that about themselves. And it can send, you know, I've had a couple of models over the years who have gone into complete spirals after being trolled on social media and talking people back down off that. And
it's tough. You know, it's tough.
It's really tough. Yeah. And so that's my fear about social media. You know, I don't have a problem so much with models, you know, doing them, you know, you do you. I've got no issue with anybody doing themselves, but I just don't like the yucky undertones of, you know, some of them. And, you know, but look, most of them are good at, they've learnt, you know, that if they're going to put themselves out there, they've got to, you know, haters going to hate, right?
Yeah, take the good with the bad.
Yeah, so if you want to live a public life, then that is what happens.
Well,
so,
yeah, it's part of it, isn't it? It's like that tough skin we were talking about.
Yeah.
All right, well, Chels, to finish up, Chelsea, I'll give you a nickname already.
Yeah, I'm not very corporate, you know, because I've been in the entertainment industry my whole life. So, I sign off emails with like kisses and cheers, Chels,
I do it too. You've got to be careful sometimes, though. But no, that's good. I can call you Chels.
Yeah,
I wanted to ask you, what does beauty mean to you?
Beauty is health, mental, emotional, physical health. That is what beauty is.
Yeah,
beautiful. You know, you can't buy laser, cut, trim, diet away or yourself into better emotional and physical health. Mm. You know, that's, that stuff comes from within. It comes from connecting with your body, connecting with who you really are, really accepting who you are in the world, and really accepting everybody else as well. You know, and that's one of the easiest ways to start accepting yourself, I think, is to just look at people in the street wandering around, try and find something, a nice thing to compliment every single person that you meet on. Look deeper, look closer, and it helps you look closer into who you are as well. And, you know, life is there. You know, I don't advocate anyone being unhealthy. I don't care about their size. Size is irrelevant. If your weight is stopping you from enjoying your life in some way, or stopping you from doing or fulfilling your dreams, then you need to do something about it, whether that's gain weight, lose weight, whatever it is. If you're living a happy and fulfilled life, whatever size you are, then you do you. You go for it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, you're so welcome. I just want to let everybody know about your book, Body Image Warrior. It's been out, what, for a few months now? A year?
It's been out, yeah, no, it came out on, it was just ridiculous. So I found out about a week before it launched that I had 9 tumours in my womb.
What?
Yes. So the book launch, and they had to, it was so urgent, the surgery, that they didn't even do a biopsy or anything. They just said, you have to go straight in and get your womb taken out. And, you know, I was going to have kids, but that's a whole other story. So that was, you know, it was all a bit of a shock. And my book was released at exactly the same time. So in March, this was February, March. So I didn't get a chance to, you know, do as much stuff about the book as I would have liked to do a lot more. I tried to get to as much, you know, as many interviews as I could with all the stitches and the bandages and everything. And,
but
it was, yeah, it was a bit hectic. So it's been a bit of a slow burn, but, you know, I didn't write it to be a bestseller. I wrote it with the idea that I just hope it just changes one person's life. And if it does that, then it's worth doing.
Absolutely.
And
it's a great read.
Thank you.
So it's part memoir, part positive body image manifesto. And it is.
Yeah.
But there's so many little insights into the industry. I mean, I know you told us a little bit about them today, but I found it fascinating. And also your upbringing as well. I think a lot of people take the famous upbringing for granted, not really understanding what's happening behind the scenes.
Well, it started out as a book about the business, but I kind of couldn't explain the business and why I am so passionate about it without going back a bit further.
Mm.
And then, you know, as I went back and back, it got sort of, you know, I was like, oh, okay, you know, it needs to kind of be written in this way so that people know who I am and why I do what I do and why it's so important. I felt like I kind of needed to touch on different parts of my story, including the, you know, vagina story, which I can't even believe I put in the book. I can't even believe I wrote about it. But, you know, people love that.
They do.
That's crazy that you did that.
Yeah.
It felt crazy at the time, but it was amazing because it really helped me engage with my body, and I hadn't done that for so long. I had been so far apart from my body and living in a little bubble up in my head, and it was just one of the most amazing, quickest ways, I think, to, you know, kind of just reconnect with my own body. And so it really changed me. So, yeah, so there's a lot in there.
It's great. Thank you so much for joining me on the show. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
If people want to purchase the book, it's in all major bookstores, isn't it?
It's pretty much everywhere,
Australia.
It's all through Australia. It's online too. It's on Amazon.
Okay.
It's ebook. I haven't done an audio book yet because I haven't had time to do it. But I think it's only $10 on ebook on Amazon at the moment.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. So, jump on there and or if people go to my Instagram, there's a link to online orders and you can buy.
Perfect. And your Instagram is at Chelsea Bonner.
Yes.
Okay, perfect. I'll put that in the show notes. And thanks again for joining me.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.